This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit with 98-year-old Phil Reed. If you just drove by his longtime business in Santa Fe Springs, California, Electronic Chrome and Grinding Company, you'd never know what treasures could be found inside. An impressive collection of immaculately restored automobiles, including some well over a century old. We're going to get into that in a bit, and you can browse some photos and video online. But right now, we're going to talk about June 6th, 1944, and D-Day for Operation Overlord and the invasion of Normandy. Over the years, we've heard from quite a few participants in that massive endeavor, many who came ashore at Utah Beach or Omaha Beach, the primary entry points for American troops. But Phil and his fellow crewmen on LCI-35 weren't landing at either one of those because they weren't carrying American troops.
At Sword Beach, we carried British commandos. We had a lot of, I forget how many ships we had in the flotilla, but we gave the British 10 ships to put their commandos on. We landed at Sword Beach, so it's a funny thing that happened. Last 2 years ago, I was over in France, and we cut out a restaurant. My niece took me over there, and I seen this soldier coming down, and he had all these badges on. I told my niece, I said, I'm going to talk to that guy. So I got talking to him, and he says, you know, he says, the funny thing is, I was on an American ship. He said, I can't figure out how we got on an American ship. So I told him I knew exactly how he got on there. I said, you may have been on my ship, but I don't know. There was 10 of us.
Uh-huh.
But he had all these badges and he had his uniform on. But he landed at Sword Beach.
Which is exactly where you guys were dropping them off.
And, yeah.
You know, so much has been said about that day, and it's been called the longest day. But how long of a day was it for you? Where did it start?
Not very long. I tell you, we landed up on a beach, unloaded the troops, and our anchor cable got stuck in the propeller there, screw. And so we chopped it off and let it go. But then a British ship hit the same thing. British ships was the same as ours, only their conning towers was a little bit lower.
Mm-hmm.
We towed them back to New Haven, England.
I don't want to interrupt, Phil, but you're describing this, and it seems to me there were probably a few other things going on there.
Oh, there was a lot of things going on.
I mean, you must have been hearing things, seeing things.
Yeah.
Worried that you might be feeling things.
Yeah, that gun is still up there in France on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
That big, I don't know how many millimeters it is, but it's still up there because when I went there last year, and I went there and saw it, but they were shooting down at us. But for some reason or another, they never did hit us. And you don't know who they hit. Because
right.
Everything is going on. And
were you up topside and seeing all this, or where were you while this was happening?
Yeah, I was on top because we pull the ramps out for the soldiers to go down. Had a little gasoline engine, one on port, one on starboard. Well, nobody could get them things going, and so I was up there getting them started.
What didn't you fix on that ship, Phil?
Huh?
What didn't you fix on that ship?
Fixed a lot of things on the engine room.
So, and I know this was your life and you lived it, and you may not think it's as big a deal as the rest of us. But on this day where world history changed, where so many guys paid with their lives on those beaches, you're right at that beach trying to let these British troops off so they can go fight for freedom. And they can't even get off because the door won't go down to let them off.
Yeah.
And you had to fix it.
Yeah.
So how'd you fix it?
I don't know. I just got it started. There's two of them, one on each side.
So it's like fixing a lawnmower or something?
Yeah, that's what they were, actually.
Uh-huh.
They pull the ramps out, and then you, when you hit the beach, you drop them down. You release them, and they drop down. But I told the captain, this was once before another invasion, though. Told the captain, don't let them down yet. It's too rough out there. He said, let them down. So I pull them out. And a wave hit him, and one of our guys was on the other end, standing on the ramp and holding the troops back, and hit that wave way out here and just flipped that ramp right over my head. And the kid was hanging onto it, and a couple of guys dove in and got him up on deck, gave him artificial respiration. and he came through.
Wow. That's a pretty dramatic scene to take
in. I can still see that guy going through the air, hanging onto that ramp. He didn't let go.
Obviously, you were cool and calm under pressure, having to fix this while there's gunfire going around and all this chaos.
Yeah.
But were you scared at all? Were you nervous?
No, you don't. It don't bother you. You know, you got a job to do, and you just got to do that job.
You know, there's so many ships there. The enemy has so many forces. But where you guys dropped these British troops off, how close was the enemy fire coming to you guys on the ship?
Just up on the hill.
And they were shooting at your ship?
Yeah. Well, not the ours, all of them. They were lined up.
Yeah. So you could have been hit.
Yeah.
Sure.
You're lucky you didn't get hit.
So you dropped those guys off, and that was the only trip you took that day?
No, we went back. Yeah, we made 25 other trips carrying them back and forth for days that followed.
Uh-huh. Well, and I'm sure that each time you came back to Sword Beach, you probably saw a little different scene.
It was, yeah. Then they had the, what do you call them, where they built, they towed those, and they made it kind of a circle. And when you unload the troops from then on, you just came over and went out on an artificial harbor.
You're talking about those artificial mulberry harbors, they call them. You can still find remains of those if you visit Normandy today. And you eventually got to use those because once June turned to July, the LCI 35 landed at a lot of other beaches besides Sword Beach, where you spent those first few weeks. And if you at home would like to explore some of the finer details, there is an outstanding website devoted to Phil's specific ship, LCI 35, complete with daily and even hourly actions of that ship at Normandy and the prior landings in Sicily and Italy. The website is maintained by the family of one of Phil's late shipmates, and I have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. One very sobering aspect of the Normandy timeline on that site are the notes of when other LCIs were sunk in the same waters where Phil's ship was operating. All told, LCI 35 was making regular trips from England to Normandy from the start of June all the way till the end of October 1944. I have to imagine that you saw things you'd never seen before.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the hardest thing to see or realize or think about?
Well, the only thing that was really hard was when that ramp got thrown off. You see that kid, you know, hanging on. I can still see him hanging on to that ramp. I don't know why he didn't let loose of it, but he hung on to it and went down with the ramp, but then he came back up. And
whew. And I'm sure you didn't have him on there for too long, but you ever think about those troops that you delivered to that beach and what might have happened to them?
Yeah, lots of times. I remember one of the beaches we landed, I think it was Salerno. What we did, as we went in to shore, we dropped the anchor just before we got there. And that would pull us back off, but the anchor didn't hold one time. And that was in Salerno. All these ships are lined up as far as you can see, LCLs and LSTs and unloading stuff. Our anchor didn't hold, so we would turn around. Our bow was out towards sea, and the stern was towards the beach. And a duck came along and said, "Get your anchor, and we'll put it in our jeep, and we'll take it out, and you can get another hole at it."
Did that work?
That poor duck, no. He just tore the back end of that duck completely off.
So what ended up happening to you guys on that LCI?
Oh, we got off. A tug came along and finally. But while we were there like that, couldn't believe it, but these all ships are all lined up as far as you can see. And here comes a German 109 strafing all these ships. We're the last one down here. And he was strafing all these ships. He, just before he got to us, pulled up. And as he pulled up, we shot him down.
Wow.
And we got credit for shooting down one German.
How about that? And I want to hear about the other landings you guys made. But I guess for people, again, who aren't familiar with an LCI, maybe you should tell us how big they were, big your crew was.
It was 158 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
20 feet wide, flat bottom.
It's not very big.
No, 158, and we carried 200 troops. It was really loaded when you...
And something tells me it probably didn't handle rough seas all that comfortably.
Yeah. Another deal that happened, we were in Palermo, and we were hauling troops up to the Straits of Messina and going to let them off there. And it was 12 o'clock at night, and I just got off a watch. I just got back down to the cruise quarters, and heard a bang. And we hit a British cruiser, broadside. He said if we would have been half a minute longer, he would have cut us right in half.
Wow.
And then on the way back, they pushed all our bow in, but nothing leaked. And so on the way back to Palermo, we were sitting alongside the ship there, and all of a sudden somebody hollered, "There's a mine," and a mine went right by us within 2 feet. You could almost touch that. I can still see those things sticking up.
You could see it from where you were.
You were sitting there.
Wow.
I wouldn't be here today if we would have hit it.
Yeah, you got a couple kids who had never been born. There's a great family photo here on the wall, and I'm sure some of those folks wouldn't be here either.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, speaking of family, did you ever hear from your brother on that other LCI?
Oh, yeah. He got on that, and he ended up in Maryland someplace after the war. He had a lot of experience. A lot of things happened.
What kind of connection or bond did you form with the other guys on that LCI?
Oh, there's only 17 of us. It's not a big crew. You had just enough to make your changes, watches.
Uh-huh. So you guys must have been pretty close.
Oh, you were. Yeah, we were.
And you went through a lot together.
Yeah. Yeah, the last one good friend of mine that he's just chum around with all the time. He just died last year.
So you're telling me you're the last of your 13 siblings alive and the last of your 17-man crew alive?
Yeah. I'm the only one left.
So you made landings?
Sicily, Salerno.
Yeah.
Anzio and Normandy. All on D-Day.
The whole purpose of your ship is to get guys in there to start the fight. So you weren't waiting around and coming later when it was quiet. You were going right into the heat of it.
Yeah.
And you just said Anzio. And
You hear about that big gun that was shooting down in Anzio?
Yeah.
Well, they were shooting at us. And it was like a Volkswagen going through the air.
So you're talking about a giant railroad gun.
Yeah.
Right? It's mounted on a railroad car, and they'd roll it in a tunnel?
They were up there, yeah.
So they'd roll it out of this tunnel and fire at these American ships that are dropping troops off on the beach. And you heard those shells going over?
Yeah, you could see it.
How big were they?
Pretty big. You didn't hardly hear it, and you didn't hear it when it landed.
Did you ever see the damage that those shells could do?
No, never did see any that got hit.
But you could imagine.
Yeah. I mean, trying to hit a little ship out there 158 feet long, and they're, 10, 15 miles up in the hills?
Yeah. Yeah, that gun was so huge, it had an incredible range.
It'd go 30 miles.
Which must have been a little eye-opening or mind-blowing for you guys.
Yeah. You know something you don't think of it. You just don't think of this stuff. You do your job and you're...
You never thought I might not make it home?
No. Never thought of that.
Yet, at all these places, and Anzio in particular, and people don't hear about it that much because they hear everything about D-Day and some
Normandy,
other situations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Normandy gets all the publicity, but Anzio was really, really bloody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Could you guys see that? Did you have a sense of what was happening?
Yeah. In fact, there's a lady that comes to the restaurant I go to. Her husband, he just died a couple years ago. He was in Anzio. He got hit, and they thought he was dead. And they had him as a dead in a bag, and they woke up, and I met her husband.
How about that? Well, you're describing some of this, Phil, and I'm wondering, was there ever a day, whether it was the death and destruction around you, the seasickness you described, the overwhelming and ever-present nature of it, was there ever a situation or a day where you thought, you know, maybe I should have kept that deferment at Douglas Aircraft because I didn't have to go overseas?
No, I never, because I wanted to go so bad.
Why was that such a consuming desire for you to go overseas and be part of it?
I don't know. I wanted to go to you the next day. And a friend of mine, he was working at Douglas, but he was just on assembly line, and he got to go. He just wouldn't let me go.
So, you know, you described those landings you guys made, which was the purpose your LCI was designed for. But what did you guys do when you weren't delivering troops to the beach?
Just stayed on the ship and got liberty. You know, during Normandy, our base was close to Brighton, New Haven it was, and that's where I met my wife.
I wanted to hear that story, so it sounds like you're ready to share it with me. How'd you meet?
Well, I met her at a dance hall. I didn't know how to dance anything, but she's a great dancer, and met her there, and I came back to the States. I never thought nothing of her no more, you know. So 3 years later, she kept writing to my mother anyway, all the while I was gone. And 3 years later, she sent me a picture of herself, and I said, oh, boy. She was a good-looking gal, and so she wanted to come over. I had a $500 bonus from Michigan. They gave all the servicemen in Michigan a $500 bonus, and it cost $500 to get her over here. I flew her over here and then started the business. And
you ever think back on this and ponder how unique it is that here, if you hadn't given up that deferment to go serve your country, if you hadn't been in the Navy and there in England, that you never would have met her?
Oh, no, I wouldn't have met
her. Yeah.
No, never would have met her.
You told us earlier what a great help she was to you in your business. Tell me about that. How'd you get started, and how did the business you started turn into everything that you have now that you share with your community and the people of Santa Fe Springs in Southern California?
Yeah, when I got discharged from the Navy, the lieutenant was filling the papers out. He says, I can get your job back at Douglas again. I said, no, you aren't. I said, I'm going to have my own business someday.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't know what it is, but I'm going to be in business someday. And I started when I first went. I bought a gas station down in L.A. someplace. So outside pump and everything. It wasn't big much of a gas station. So some guy came along and offered me a little bit more money than I paid for it. And I went to work for General Motors for a while. And my brother was out here. He had a chrome shop. I went to work for him. And a customer, big customer, said he wasn't satisfied with him. He said, if you start your own business, because he knew I was doing all his work, figuring out the jigs and how to play it and everything. And he says, you start your own business and I'll give you all my business. So I went to the bank and I never had no money. They wouldn't give me nothing. So I met a guy in a restaurant. He says, I know the manager over to Golden State Bank. You go over and tell him I sent you. He says, how much you want? I says, I need at least $25,000. Didn't have a penny in my pocket hardly. So I went over to visit him and I talked to him. He gave me the $25,000. And that's how I started. I don't like owing people money. And I wanted to have my own buildings. And so I bought the chrome shop building. We manufacture mostly oil well tools, but we can fix anything.
Can fix anything.
Yeah. I mean, if anything's worn out, we can hard chrome plate it. We pre-grind it, plate it oversized, and grind it to the regular size.
And you started it with the help of your wife, and your two children are carrying it on?
Yeah.
I bet that gives you some pride.
Yeah. I don't do anything anymore. Just come down here.
I'm sure you didn't set out to assemble 20 cars in a museum.
No, I did them one at a time.
How did that start? What was the origin?
Well, this first one, like I said, is that Studebaker that's in the other building. I did that one, and then I just kept buying one at a time and restore them. This used to be my workshop in here.
Uh-huh. And when you say buying them one at a time, you're not buying a finished product. You're buying a big project.
A big project, yeah. Some of the cars was just like that little Winton here, sitting here. You would have thrown it away.
The one that used to belong to Gene Autry?
Yeah, and I did that. That was almost my last one I did.
So this has become a big part of your life, and your wife was involved in it with you?
All the way, yeah.
They've been married 70 years and counting, and we're going to hear about some of their automobile adventures together when we come back. Check out the photos at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you'll also find a link to a newspaper article from 10 years ago when Phil and Joy marked the 100th anniversary of Henry Ford's first Model T by driving one of their Model Ts from Baltimore all the way to L.A. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.